Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we've got the Blackhawks struggling, and the Bears are who that we thought they were. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Located just 90 minutes from the city limits, fun for the whole family. They've got games this week, Wednesday, against the Iowa Wild, and then Saturday against Grand Rapids. So head on over to icehogs.com, get some tickets for those games and a hat, shirt, jersey, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Oh, Alex. I was really hoping we would have a completely different conversation today than we are about to have.
Yeah. To say the least, I was hoping for a victory Monday. I was hoping that we would have some fun, but I think instead we are going to be doing a lot of venting, and I think there are some strong things we'd like to say about the state of the team. Yeah.
Do you have a preference of where you want to start with this team? Or should we just start pointing fingers and being angry?
Well, I think everything that we have to say does involve the pointing of fingers and the angry emotion. To certain degrees of very angry and extremely angry. Let's kind of put it in that range. I think the point I'd like to start with is this loss took away any possibility of respectability for the Chicago Bears this season. Instead of one game under 500, they're now 3-6, and I think this game was the big tipping point of the season, and they lost it.
Yeah, I angrily made notes, as normally I'll have like talking points about the game.
So did I. That's so funny.
And I don't even want to discuss the game for the most part. You know, for a few things here and there, but mostly I just want to talk about the state of the Bears. And I made like this multi-page notes because. And you sort of touched on one is, you know, building on yours is not only is this a tipping point and they lose respectability, but this loss almost assuredly guarantees they're going to be last place in the division again, because they are now two full games in the standings behind the Packers. And since they are 0-2 against the Packers this year, that essentially makes them three games back of the Packers because they'd have to overcome that tiebreaker.
Yeah, and I mean, let's face it. With the way things are going now, I don't really expect them to beat Detroit next week, so that's going to push you back even further. Yeah, I agree. It's hard to not see the Bears finish last. It would have to take a pretty good collapse from either the Packers or the Lions to not finish last. You know, the Bears may win a few more games, but yeah, I think it pretty much cements the basement.
Yeah, I mean, I fully expect the Packers to nosedive from here, but that not to the extent that the Bears are going to be able to catch them.
Right, right. Yeah, that's they've dug their hole and they're sticking in it.
Yeah, and I just want to assure every single person that's listening to the show right now is Brett Hundley is not a good quarterback, and you didn't see him suddenly come of age against the Bears It's the Bears played terribly and let a terrible quarterback win that game. He's an awful quarterback. And next week, who I think they have their bye next week, but or this coming week. But after that, you're going to see him be terrible against every other team they play. And they're going to struggle, and they're going to lose another, you know, multi-game set in a row. But the Bears aren't going to be able to win enough games to catch them in the standings.
No. And I mean, right now, I think it's safe to say this is the Minnesota Vikings division. I think that I wouldn't say it's clinched or wrapped up, but, you know, I think that they have really good control this division. And obviously the Bears are on the opposite end. Let me just say how shocked I am that a team that had a bye week, that had 2 weeks to prepare against a team that is without its top two running backs because they both went down yesterday, and without arguably the best football player on the planet. You had 2 weeks to prepare for this game. You looked lost. You were undisciplined. You were all over the place. What the hell?
You touched on points 12 and 13 on my list. Number 12.
Perfect.
How many pre-snap penalties can the Bears have?
Two in a row without even snapping the damn ball.
They had a delay of game on an extra point.
How does that happen?
The most gimme play in all of sports, and they botch it. Point 13 is the Green Bay Packers. Not only did the Bears have 2 weeks to prepare for this, they're coming off of their bye. They are playing the Packers, who went from arguably the best, if not the best, probably second best quarterback in the NFL to probably, man, there's some really bad quarterbacks right now, arguably one of the worst quarterbacks. And they're coming off of a short week.
They played a tough game against the Lions. Short week rest, like you said.
And the Bears couldn't do anything.
Here is what, I don't know if this is on your list or not, but I'm going to mention this. One play that I think isn't, or I should say two plays that are not being talked about enough, was on the first Packers drive of the game. Kyle Fuller had what should have been sure interceptions just dropped twice.
Yeah, the secondary didn't have a good game.
No, and you know what we saw? Brett Hundley and his practice squad team do that didn't have a line, that didn't have their real running backs in, that didn't have Aaron Rodgers in. They still were able to spread the ball around more than the Bears did.
And that's because they have a real offensive coordinator.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll touch on this later, but a few stats I kind of want to go off that. And again, tell me if this is on your list or not. Here are two key things I want to touch on. Adam Shaheen had that great play. Remember that early on in the game?
Yes.
He was thrown at what? Two times the whole game?
Yeah, that's point number six.
There you go. Point number six. This is great. Yeah. I love this.
Adam Shaheen had 39 yards receiving in the first quarter, and then he didn't get a target for the rest of the game.
Why?
This is your tight end, your supposed tight end of the future with your quarterback of the future. They should be playing together as much as possible to build that rapport, because as the old saying goes, a young quarterback's best friend is a tight end.
Yeah, especially in a passer's game like this day and age. It's essential. The other
especially
piece,
when your real starting tight end is out for his career, and
right,
your other big free agent tight end is out due to mystery illness and hasn't practiced in two weeks.
Yeah, what is wrong with Deion Sims?
Nobody knows. Maybe, yes, there's people that know, but nobody in the public seems to know.
John Foxitis or something. The other one I want to share is, oh, Mr. Human Joystick, supposed to be a big playmaker. What? One rushing attempt and one carry? Or one rushing attempt and one catch? That's it? What the hell? Why isn't he playing? This isn't just yesterday. The past few weeks, they've done nothing with him. What's with that? Could you explain that to me, please?
This is point number 7.
All right, wow. So I got 12 and 13 and 6 and 7.
You got 6, 7, 12, 13, and 14. Yeah.
Ooh, that's 3. That's a turkey.
Why does the most explosive offensive player the Bears have only get 2 touches in a game? Why?
The past few weeks, he hasn't... What? I don't get it. I mean, do you have a logical answer? Because I sure hell don't.
I mean, I get why if you're not going to give him a lot of touches as running back... because you don't want to get him beat up. But you know what? Is he has good hands. He can run right. Good routes. And and which leads to point number 8 is Marcus Wheaton got 2 snaps in this game. So clearly you don't have wide receivers. Is why not put him at least wide receiver or like some sort of pick bubble screen.
Right.
Get you don't have to put him in there all the time, but Tariq Cohen needs to get the ball more than 2 touches in a game. He needs
exactly.
To, especially when you lose by a touchdown.
We just listed 2 essential key guys for the future, Adam Shaheen and Tariq Cohen. These are 2 essential guys with their quarterback of the future. How are you supposed to work through things and develop when you don't use it?
Would you like to see if you can get another one on the list?
Yes. Okay. 11 penalties in the first half. Bad.
Yes.
Bad. And I'm sure that's on your list somewhere in some form.
It is. It's point 16.
16. All right. Let's see. We talked about Kyle Fuller. I just wanted to touch on Trubisky himself. I'm sure this is on your list somewhere. I thought he was okay. Obviously, he had a lot of passing yards, nearly 300. He was 21 for 35. There were some drop passes. But boy, oh boy, he has got to improve on picking up pressure.
Yeah, that goes to point number 11. Which is actually a multifaceted point. The Packers sacked Trubisky 5 times in the game.
Lost for 29 yards.
In their previous 3 games, the Packers had combined 2 sacks.
Are you kidding? Oh.
So I wrote, the game plan needs to help Trubisky to make quicker decisions. Sure, I give part of this to Trubisky, but you know what? He's in his, 17th game post-high school? Is yeah. You need to game plan him to help him do that. Is if that is, you know, limiting his options. I mean, part of this is I would put more max protect plays in. Is he A, it has less people for him to throw it to, and B, it keeps him from getting sacked. It gives him longer in the pocket.
And yeah, I mean, there's no question that the line was not very good yesterday. Blocking really struggled, and I feel like as good as Josh Sitton is as a player, he's kind of slowing down a bit and not as efficient. But I mean, it's not just on him. Overall, the line did not play very good yesterday. But you know, it's kind of an offensive effort. But you know, hey, at least he threw for a bunch of yards. Right? I mean, we can take that away as a plus.
Yeah, it's something.
And kind of related to that, let's see if this is on your list. This is the one somewhat positive thing I have. Other than the dropped pass on the final drive, Dontrell Inman looked pretty good.
That's point 9.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know much more to say about that, but overall, I think he was a good pickup.
Absolutely. I mean, for what you could get at the time, probably the best option.
Oh, for sure.
I may have put a little more negative spin on it, though, is my point number nine is Dontrell Inman was another team's trash, but is far and away the best wide receiver that we have right now. Let that sink in.
You're not wrong. You're really not wrong.
And that's not a knock on him. I thought he played well. He's got talent, but he was a guy that couldn't get the field for a not good San Diego Chargers team. And the Bears were able to pick him up.
Well, as long as it gives you something somewhat reliable to throw downfield, I mean, it's some progress, but how can you call it much progress when you still can't spread out your game plan like we've been talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really frustrating. Our offensive coordinator had 2 weeks to come up with a game plan to face a Packers defense that has really struggled against the run. And I get that you've been able to run very well, but you have to, if you're Dow Loggins, you and John Fox, you have to look at this game going, all right, Dom Capers has made a career of eating young quarterbacks alive. So you have to assume that Dom Capers is going to do everything in his power to stop the running plays and make Mitch Trubisky. Trubinsky,
hashtag Trubinsky.
They were going to make him win this game, and they were going to do as much as they could to confuse him. And Dow Loggins had no answer for a question that was obviously, or a problem that was obviously going to occur. That's what makes me angry.
It's like, it says to me that a team has 2 weeks to prepare, and you're not willing to make much adjustments. You can say, oh, well, we have Dontrell Inman. We could throw downfield a little more. Yeah, okay. But there's a bit more of adjusting than just that.
And is, you know, Dontrell Inman's a nice pickup, but he's not the field stretcher like Marcus Wheaton was supposed to be. So he's not going to stretch the field. You're going to be doing these like short and mid routes. You're not going to be doing deep routes. And for the most part, that's been the best touch that Trubisky has had, is on these longer passes.
Yeah. I mean, he's looked great on the long passes. I mean, his best pass of the game was probably, I'd argue, the touchdown pass to Josh Bellamy. I mean, that was, like I said, I bet that I would say that was his best pass of the game. I'm not sure if he had another one in mind, but that's what I would have said.
Yeah. So Dow Loggins was as safe of a pick to be offensive coordinator as could be, and which is just sums up John Fox's entire career, is let's play it safe and not take any risks. And
you
mediocre
you can't
is okay.
Play safe when you're trying to develop. You just can't.
Which sort of leads to point 10, is John Fox is an absolute detriment to Mitchell Trubisky. If for nothing else, is in this league, you learn from your mistakes. And if you are coaching your player to avoid any sort of mistakes and play a safe game, all you're doing is setting him up for failure. Is after the game, Mitch Trubisky was talking about how he was holding the ball too long, partially because he didn't want to make a mistake in the throws. And that's a John Fox burning into his head, is, you know what? I don't want to see him throw interceptions, but I would rather see him throw an interception because he misjudged how fast a cornerback can close, rather than him hold the ball too long, waiting for some magical wide receiver that we don't have to open up, get wide open and throw him a pass deep. That I would much rather, because then you go back and you look at the film and say, you know what? I see now that how fast that guy can close. So he baited me. I get that. Now I'm never going to do that again. As opposed to, you know, what John Fox is beating into him is playing it safe.
And you know what? The more you think about it and the more you hear it, the more it just pisses you off as a fan. I mean, look, this season is lost. It's not like they're going to go anywhere in the playoffs or whatnot. They're not. There is absolutely no reason why the Bears shouldn't just go out and try everything known to man and let Trubisky just do things. If you want to do a simple route, do a simple route. If you want to try to make things complicated, try to make things complicated. If it's risky, so the heck what? Just do it. Let him show you every bit of potential. This coaching staff is not letting us see every bit of his potential, and that is going to reflect a lot on his play when he's not getting a chance to show his full potential. And you know what? If you throw a lot, you're going to get intercepted more. Look at some of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. I had the same conversation with my college friends the other night. More quarterbacks who throw more interceptions. Look at Brett Favre. Look at Peyton Manning. When you throw more, you're more susceptible to it. But you know what? You still can make it work. Because interceptions are this whole judgmental bugaboo. It's like, oh, if he throws an interception, he's bad. Well, not necessarily true. Obviously, if you're throwing more interceptions and touchdowns and completions, yeah, that's bad. But it's this whole thing of safe, safe. Don't want to get intercepted. Safe. Let him throw.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a 32-year-old quarterback and you're throwing a bunch of interceptions, yeah, that's terrible. If you're a 22, 23-year-old quarterback and you throw interceptions, that's called a learning process. I look at everyone's, you know, darling is Deshaun Watson. Is that game before he blew his knee up, he threw four touchdown passes. And everybody will tell you about those four touchdown passes, but they won't tell you about the three interceptions he threw that game.
Yes. And you know, thank you. Oh my God. Why won't people understand that?
Is you gave him a chance and sure, he made a bunch of mistakes, but you gave him the opportunity to make up for it. Is he threw interceptions, but he threw more touchdowns than interceptions. And that is called, you know, him learning on the job. Is what they do to Mitch Trubisky is a detriment to him. And there's people out there that are coddling him. There's people out there that are lambasting Mitch Trubisky. But, you know, I can't even judge the kid because they've put zero talent around him. And they have a offensive coordinator who should go back to being a quarterback coach because that's the level where he should be. And you have a head coach who's notorious for have safe quarterback play with no rocking the boat and no going out there and winning. He was able to win with Tim Tebow because he played it safe and ran the ball and let the defense win. Is John Fox is a detriment.
And it goes back also to... I just tweeted that out because I think that's a great quote.
This reminds me of one of my biggest criticism of the Emery Trustman era was everybody had a job that was at least one level higher than they have ever coached. At least one level higher. And that is not a recipe for winning. If you look at the Minnesota Vikings on their staff, they have three former head coaches. They didn't promote everybody to a higher position. Sure, at some point, somebody's got to get a promotion. But if you promote everybody at the same time to a job that they've never done, that's more that they don't have the qualifications for, it's a recipe for disaster. And Dow Logans was not ready to be a NFL offensive coordinator for a winning program with a young quarterback with no talent. And there he's showing it. John Fox is supposed to be this guy who's a statesman of the league and knows all these people. And he couldn't reach out and bring in somebody else. He couldn't bring in a experienced offensive coordinator. I mean, he brought Adam Gase, and Adam Gase did well, considering, you know what? Why couldn't you go and bring somebody else like that?
Yeah, I mean, I dream of Adam Gase somehow becoming our head coach, because I think that'd be awesome, but, you know, can't dream now. But yeah, this coaching staff isn't right for this kind of stage the Bears are in. And I think I'm pretty confident that Ryan Pace knows that. This just gets into my whole question of, how does Ryan Pace control this coaching staff? Is John Fox's status with the team a Pace thing, or is it a McCaskey thing? If, let's say, Pace wants to give Fox the boot, does he have to go through the McCaskeys and get their approval? Because that's what it sounds like from some people, but nobody really knows for sure, which gets into this whole other problem of, how much power does each person in this organization have? When there's a question like that, things usually don't tend to work right.
Yeah, I mean, they made it, or when there was all the rumors about Bill Polian coming in and being an advisor, is McCaskey, Jordan McCaskey came out and said, no, is Ryan Pace is in charge of all football operations. Anything football related, he's fully in charge, whatever he wants to do. But then it came out that he had to talk to George McCaskey about trading up to get Mitchell Trubisky. And now you're hearing stories of Virginia McCaskey is very upset about this, you know, loss. And the last time we heard that she was upset was after the back-to-back 50-point games in the Trestman era. So
that was 2014.
Yeah, and that made me really question whether or not that's truly the case, that Ryan Pace is fully in charge, if these stories are correct. But John Fox can't be on steady ground. John Fox has to be on as shaky a ground as, you know, I think the only person on in football that is on more shaky ground is McAdoo in the Giants.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that is a disaster. John Fox is only probably more secure than him. I mean, maybe on equal footing is Hugh Jackson in Cleveland, but that's it. That is as unsafe a ground as you can be on right now if you're John Fox.
Yeah, no, I mean, what I said about yesterday's loss is that John Fox was hanging on to the Bears. What was left was a microscopic thread. And to me, that microscopic thread was just snipped after that loss. I think that it should be fate sealing right there.
Yeah, I actually read a quote from somebody that said John Fox was hanging on by a mime string. So it's basically an invisible string. Yeah, that's why it clicked when you said that. And, you know, this was my point one, and it was just probably because it's the most, talked about one. But regardless of whether or not there was enough evidence to overturn the call on the field on the John Fox's challenge, why did John Fox stop his offense from running up to the line of scrimmage confidently to run a play? To make a quick snap to make that dumb challenge. And I get that there's a person in the booth who's watching the replay that comes down to John Fox's ear, but John Fox is the head coach. And John Fox has a history of just absolutely awful timing for coach challenges. And that was a terrible one. Is what purpose was that? You know, you were going to get the ball really darn close to the
You were on the 2-yard line. It was first and goal. Just go forward with it. I mean, oh, God. That really, really, really boggled my mind.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I think it was a bad, I don't think there was enough to call it a fumble when that was, you know, there was a, when you go by, clear and overwhelming evidence. I don't think there was enough there, but that was a dumb challenge. And if you would have just let it go and taken your first and goal, and you probably would have gotten a touchdown in there. And that's the difference in the game. John Fox botched that badly.
Yeah, and now there are numerous videos on Twitter of that with the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme playing. And, you know, I think that goes to show what that decision was like. But I don't know if you heard any of, like, the presser afterwards, any of the Bears presser after the game. The way John Fox was trying to, like, describe it, to me, it, just, like, the tone and the way he was kind of going, oh, you know, it just, it seemed like he knew he screwed up. And though he said, you know, it's on me and we wish it could have gone another way, I think he really knows that he really screwed the pooch on that one.
Because he did screw the pooch. He should know it because he did it.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, there are some people who, you know, don't take any responsibility or, you know, don't, you know, think that they're responsible, but he clearly knew that that was not good.
Yeah, it's pathetic. And this was a random point, and I'm just going to try to shoehorn it in right now. It's point number 15. John Fox has 11 wins in over 2.5 seasons with the Bears. 11 wins in 2.5 seasons.
And only, what, 3 in division?
Something along those lines.
Because last year, they beat the Lions and the Vikings, and the year before that, they beat the Packers. I think those are the only divisional wins that they've had.
Yeah, because they haven't won one this year yet.
Nope. And
they're 0-3.
Right. And most of the wins in 2015 were against either AFC teams or the NFC West, I believe. It was just that Packers win on Thanksgiving.
Let's see. We've touched on most of my points. I've got a couple left here. Is point 2. The defense sucked. Only 2-3 and outs against a team with a dog turd quarterback and Brent Hundley in there. 2-3 and outs. You did more than that against Cam Newton.
Secondary looked bad, as you said. The pressure wasn't there like it has been in the past. I think missing Trevathan was pretty big. We saw big differences between him being in there and him not being in there. I mean, look at that play when, who was it? Jordy Nelson just kind of ran past the line and got into the end zone. Or was that Ty Montgomery? It was somebody. But they just ran straight line into the end zone uncontested. And you know, you didn't see that the past few weeks.
Yeah, Kyle Fuller got picked on most of this game and really had a hard time covering Davante Adams. The Bears, let's see, cross that point off. The Bears got next to zero pressure from their front seven, and Vic Fangio had to dial up blitzes to get pressure. And this included Leonard Floyd struggling against backup offensive linemen.
Did that really surprise me?
Yeah, so the Bears defense, I mean, just imagine if that would have been Aaron Rodgers out there.
Ugh.
The way the Bears defense played.
That's probably a 41-10 blowout.
Yeah, probably. Because that would be the point where Mitch Trubisky would have to start firing up 47 passes in a row. And then they get a pick six, and then, you know, then we start seeing memes. The new Jay Cutler, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, at least there wasn't that. Bright side.
Bright side. So the Bears defense just didn't come out to play, and they just looked so flat. And then this one goes against, you know, right against Dow Loggins again. This next point is the green for the one team is on their third string running back. The other team prides itself on being a run-first team and really establishing the run. Guess which team ran 35 times for 144 yards, and guess which team ran 17 times for 55 yards?
Somehow the Packers did the first, and somehow the Bears did the second.
Yep. How do you run 17 times if you're a running team? How?
I don't know. And again, this comes back to my point about Tariq Cohen. Where is he? Why aren't you utilizing him more? You also have Benny Cunningham, which obviously his play was negated by the challenge. But still, I mean, Benny Cunningham is a solid third string guy. You could utilize, you have a chance to utilize three guys, and you didn't. Instead, you're just going to kill Jordan Howard.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. It's so frustrating.
I just, I don't get what they're so afraid of. You have to, do they not see how this conservative play safe calling isn't doing anything? Do they not see that?
I don't even know. I would love to be a fly on the wall and hear what goes on in Hallis Hall, because if they are okay with what goes on here, then they've got to be certifiable. This is not okay. I mean, there's one thing with being not good enough to do your job and you're not qualified, but you, at some point, I'm not a professional, and I could walk in there and feel like I could devise a better game plan than what Dal Logan's has. And John Fox just is perfectly fine letting it go as it is. What does he do? Is Vic Fangio clearly controls that defense? Dal Logan's apparently has free reign on the offense. John Fox just sits down and just rambles on the sideline and yells at referees.
Yeah. It's like you said, I'd love to be a fly on the wall and hear their conversations. I mean, if something's not working, you typically try to arrange things. And look, you can say they won those two games in a row against the Ravens and against the Panthers, but consistent problems of lack of offensive production, and you don't change anything. You don't use a bunch of young weapons you have. You don't look for their full potential. And I will tell you this, we are coming up, Well, we're at the half point way of the season already, and your schedule is going to see some not so great defenses in, like, say, the Browns and, you know, all that stuff.
The 49ers.
The 49ers, too. I would love to see if they make any sort of adjustment, because right now it seems like they don't want to.
Yeah, I don't get it. You're is an organization, you are fine with two awful tackles and two injured guards and a crappy backup center. You're fine with that. You were fine with, and this is going to go back, I supported when Brandon Marshall got dealt. I felt that was the right move. I supported when Martellus Bennett got moved. Was the right move. I questioned a little bit, but I sort of understood where they were coming from with letting Alshon Jeffrey go. But the big problem is you can let these guys go to do addition by subtraction, but you have to find a way. You have to have an answer when you do this of how are we going to replace the talent? How are we going to replace the productivity? And they haven't done that. Is they've decided that they were going to ride out Kevin White suddenly coming into his own, and they were going to ride out Cam Meredith. Was he an undrafted rookie or undrafted player? And they were going to ride him to be their number one quarterback or a wide receiver. That was their plan, is when they would let Alshon Jeffrey go, is when they let Brandon Marshall go. It was, we're going to ride Alshon Jeffrey. And when they let Alshon Jeffrey go, we're going to ride Kevin White and Cam Meredith. And
one's injured pro and the other was, what, undrafted, like you said?
When you got rid of Martellus Bennett, you went with Zach Miller, and he got injured. Deion Sims, mystery illness. And it just, you've got to have guys that you can rely on. Sammy Watkins was available this season in a trade. And I get it. You don't want to give up draft picks because they're valuable. But you know what? you get Sammy Watkins for a mid-round draft pick. What are the odds that you're going to bring in somebody as good as Sammy Watkins with a mid-round, was it a second or third round pick? You're not you're not going to get a guy like that. Sure, you're going to have to pay Sammy Watkins a big amount of money, but you've got so much money to spend as the Bears.
Plenty of money. Yeah, exactly.
Is you bring him in and you let your future franchise quarterback throw to a guy that's an NFL caliber receiver. And that's what happens is then you can still make that Dontrell Inman trade because it was a seventh round pick, conditional seventh round pick. Is you then that makes him that much better, which makes Kendall Wright that much better, which makes, you know, everybody down the line that much better, because instead of being a one, then they get to be a two, and the guy that's now a two gets to be a three, and you downgrade everybody else, and it improves your overall talent level. And the Bears just aren't doing that.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head right there. You hit the nail right on the head.
I've wanted to give Ryan Pace the benefit of the doubt on so many things, but for every really good thing he does, there's an equal boneheaded thing he does. You know, you draft, Leonard Floyd, who's turning out to be pretty good, but then you draft Kevin White. And you can't fully fault him on Kevin White because how do you know somebody's going to break a bunch of bones every season? You go out and you make a trade for Akeem Hicks, who looks terrific. But then you go out and you sign Marcus Wheaton and Marcus Cooper to be two of your big name acquisitions in the offseason. And both those guys had what, combined four snaps this past week?
Yeah. Yeah.
On a terrible Bears team.
Yeah. I don't know how to explain it. I just, what is going through their minds? That's what I want to know. How does every media person and fan see it, but the team's actually running the team not? That boggles my mind.
I really want to walk up. Have you ever seen the movie Office Space?
Oh, of course. Many times.
I really want to have the Bobs go in there and talk to the Bears coaching staff in front office and just be like, what is it you say you do here?
Yeah. And then you walk out and burn it down.
I'm a people person. Deal with the customers. And then I read somewhere that apparently the Bears did a fan survey. And I don't know if it was planned for this timing, but it was after the Bears lost to the Packers. How do you think the fans feel? How do you think they feel?
Oh, we're just fine because 1985 happened and we're still living on that. We're just fine.
Yeah, I get I'm totally back getting fan input and wanting to make their experience better because they're your customers. But you just have, if you don't realize embarrassing losses, and it doesn't matter what the score was. This was an absolute embarrassing loss.
Losing this game in any way, shape, or form is bad.
Yeah, this was an absolute embarrassing loss. And if you have to ask the fans how they feel after an embarrassing loss, then you are not fit to own this team. And if Virginia McCaskey in her, in her twilight years, and this is not a dig of anything, is just, she's like 95 years old, is human beings only live a certain length of time. Is in her twilight years, if she wants to honor her father's memory, she should sell this team while she's still in charge.
Yeah, that's my wish. That's my dream. Unfortunately, it doesn't sound like that's going to happen. But I was thinking the other day, and this was one kind of little almost monologue I want to say about the situation. Now, I hate comparing football and baseball a lot because they're two totally different sports, but let's compare how the Cubs function and how what we know the Bears function and lack thereof. So the Cubs have an owner. The owner says to his president of operations and general manager, "You are in charge of all baseball activities. If you come to me and say you want to make a trade or sign somebody or do this, I will back you because I trust you because your job is to manage the baseball aspect of this franchise." With the Bears, you have this whole clash of coaches, GMs, and owners, and we don't even know exactly who is in charge of what anymore. It's all a jumbled mess. The Cubs right now have adopted a winning attitude. It's gotten them a World Series and three trips to the championship series. The Bears, you know, what's their attitude? What's their outlook? What's their culture like? What's their philosophy? There are so many things that they're so secretive about and we don't know that it just looks like they're covering up a big mess when you have clashes of different, you know, heights of hierarchy coming and making different decisions for ultimately the same team. That gets messy. Bad things happen. The Cubs are organized. They have a winning outlook. The Bears are not very organized, and they don't have a winning attitude. They just don't.
No, they don't. And it's so frustrating that to watch this team. And we got a question about John Fox's future and let me get the actual wording. And after the lackluster performance yesterday, is there now more of an urgency that we have an offensive-minded coach, and what are potential options? I mean, the options right now are pretty limited. Is either the Bears let John Fox finish out the season and you fire him in the offseason on that Black Monday, or they fire him right now and they let Vic Fangio serve as the interim head coach, and you basically get a half a season as a job interview to see how Vic Fangio will fare as a head coach.
You know, this is my
this
is my opinion on that whole thing that you just mentioned, and I don't know if you share it, but I'm all for making the fire right now. What do you got to lose? Your season's lost. And I think by doing that, it would at least show that the Bears have some balls to show that they are meaning business here, saying that we don't tolerate this anymore. We don't have any more patience with this. At least have the guts to do something. That's my opinion.
That is much better than a survey to the fans asking how they feel after an embarrassing loss to their biggest rival. On their home field is better than a survey.
Absolutely.
Ryan Pace and George McCaskey and Virginia McCaskey, you're saying, listen, we understand how you feel because we feel just as bad. We had to let him go and we're starting afresh here. And Vic Fangio wants to be a head coach. He's interviewed for jobs. And this gives him that opportunity. And you either say, you know what, he's doing a pretty good job. Then we bring in a real offensive coordinator in the offseason, hire him. Or we move a different direction. Ideally, I would like to see them. I mean, this doesn't happen very often, but is finding a head coach that's willing to accept Vic Fangio as the defensive coordinator. Historically it has happened, keeping a coordinator when you're a new head coach, but not all that often.
And look, you know what? I would rather see the Bears not function properly if they did an interim type thing the rest of the year than staying status quo, because at least, again, they'd have the guts to make a change right now, and they would show us that they understand that status quo is not good enough. actions speak more than words. I don't want to hear that old Virginia is pissed. I don't want to hear George McCaskey is disappointed and nothing changes. If you are truly unhappy with the way things are going, you step up and you make a change, because the Chicago Bears are all about catch you later, later never comes. Do something. Grow a pair. Show us you care.
Yeah, I'm fully back everything you said there. And if I was had any power at all, John Fox would have been fired before he made it home from that game. He had been in his car and got a call. Adios. Don't come back.
You know, I was wondering if I was going to wake up this morning and see that he was gone. You know, I woke up and I looked at my phone and, you know, there was nothing. But, you know, part of me was wondering if it was going to happen.
I mean, you know, hear me out for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I read a story maybe last week or the week before that Gary Kubiak wants to come back into the NFL as an offensive coordinator. He doesn't want to be a head coach anymore because he had to step down to his health problems. And, you know, he said he wants to come back as a coordinator. Is, you know, what if you fire Fox, you give Fangio the chance, Fangio does a good job, and you reach out to Gary Kubiak, you know, in that interim and say, hey, we would like to bring you in the fold, see how you guys work together, and then jettison Dow Logan's, you know, right in the offseason, you know, and smoothly transition over to Gary Kubiak.
Why the heck not at this point? Again, why not? The only, like I said, try anything now, but don't stay status quo, because that's the worst thing you can do right now.
And this is not even a knee jerk. This is not a knee jerk reaction.
No,
this
it's
is
not.
This is something that's been coming for a long time. I don't think anybody was overjoyed about John Fox being the head coach. I think that was sort of forced down Ryan Pace's throat a little bit.
I think it was too.
Because they were like, we're not going to have, you know, a 30-something-year-old general manager, and then on his first day of the job, have him start looking by himself at head coaches. I think they wanted him to get his feet wet, and they were like, you know, this is a safe bet. And it was just a bad safe bet. And now it's his time, and you can't, and I don't think it's fair to fire Ryan Pace without giving him a chance to bring in his own head coach.
I agree.
I think you have to, even if, you know, part of this is not bringing enough talent and not doing enough things is his fault, is I think you can't fire a guy until you've got, let him surround himself with his people 100%. And I don't think John Fox was his. I think it was handed to him.
Yeah, it's what it sounds like.
I think you got to let him bring in his own guy. And, you know, if they're not going to go that route of firing John Fox, I think best case scenario is you bring in somebody that is an offensive mind and is willing to say, hey, you know what, Vic Fangio and his staff are seasoned professionals. I'd love for all of them to stay on, all of them, and they stay on. That would be best case scenario. And, you know, somebody asked, or, you know, there was a question of who would be possible replacements. And I just, you know, this is not an in-depth list at all. I didn't have a ton of chance to really look into it, but the first names that came to my mind, were
Josh McDaniels,
the offensive coordinator of New England. And I'm not that high on him because, you know, typically the Bill Belichick tree of coaches doesn't fare well. And Josh Daniels had a rough time the last time he replaced, John Fox. Oh no, John Fox replaced him, didn't he? Or was it the other way around?
I'd have to, I don't remember. Whatever. But I know what you're saying. I know what you're talking about.
When he was in Denver, Josh Daniels had a rough time.
Yeah.
The other name I had was Frank Reich, who's the Eagles offensive coordinator and former NFL quarterback. That Eagles team is cruising on offense.
You could say that again.
So that's a possibility. Dave Tobe, the former Bears special teams coach and the current special teams coach for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's interviewed numerous times for head coaching jobs. I think he's due for one. He's a very smart football man. He's shown he knows the game. And, you know, there's not a ton of precedence for special teams coaches being good head coaches, but John Harbaugh and Mike Ditka come to mind.
Yeah. Now, there's a lot of talk about John Harbaugh, or Jim Harbaugh, I should say. Sorry, not John Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh and whole leaving Ann Arbor. I don't know if that's on your list, is it?
No, because I really, really don't think Jim Harbaugh. John Harbaugh was the special teams coach that went on to win a Super Bowl with the Ravens. Still there. But Jim Harbaugh, I don't see him leaving Michigan, even though I think probably Bears would be another job he would be interested in because he played for the Bears for a long time. And but I think until he achieves what he wants to achieve in Ann Arbor, I don't see him leaving.
I agree with you.
He's got so much. He's making so much money. He's loves the job. He's very happy, and he's already starting to turn the program around. And I just don't see him leaving. I think that's a pipe dream. I think that was as much of a pipe dream as when the Bears were trying to find a new head coach, and they kept saying, Gruden's going to come out of the press box and come coach, or what's his name? They used to coach the Steelers is going to come out of the press box and be the Bears head coach. And all those were just pipe dreams.
Yeah.
Look at realistic things.
No, I'm totally with you on that.
Let's see what I have. Two more names on my list. One is, as ridiculous as this sounds, Jim Bob Cooter, the offensive coordinator for the Lions.
You know, a lot of people are kind of high on that guy, and I think that he's done a pretty nice job from the offensive standpoint. Not going to lie, I've thought about that name as well a couple of times. And plus, it's fun to say.
Yeah, he's got a terrible name, but it's he's a really smart guy, and I'm looking at, I mean, honestly, I'm thinking Ryan Pace with how young he is, and he's got a young quarterback that's a high draft pick. I really think he's going to try to find a young offensive mind to be the head coach next. And Jim Bob Cooter, how old is he? He's got to be right around 40, maybe. He's not even that. He's 33. Yo, he doesn't look that young. but Jim Bob Cooter, yeah, he's 33 years old, and he's, you know, you've seen the offense for the Lions look so much better than you've seen him look in a long time. And a big part of that is Jim Bob Cooter has that, you know, Matt Stafford playing really well. He finally focused a lot of that talent he had. And the last name on my list is Matt Nagy, the offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's young too. He's only 39. And he's got a funny story. Is he was a quarterback at University of Delaware, where what's his name from the Ravens is Joe Flacco is from, and he ended up playing for the New York Dragons of the Arena Football League, and the Carolina Cobras, the Georgia Force, and the Columbus Destroyers in the AFL. And then he went on and started coaching high school, not even head coaching. He was like offensive coordinator, and he started becoming a coaching intern for the Eagles. And when Kevin Cobb got injured in 2009, they tried to sign him to be the backup quarterback, and the NFL, you know, botched their, they nixed the contract. But they, the Eagles decided to promote him to, from an intern to an assistant coach. And then he got promoted to offensive quality coach. And then Andy Reid brought him over with Kansas City and named him the head coach. So he's really learned under Andy Reid, and Andy Reid's a very smart guy. I
was
like going to
say
Reid.
You're learning under one of the best,
and you learn from the. I mean, you got groomed. I mean, that's another name. He's 39 years old. These are all young guys. I mean, Frank Reich's 55, so that's a little bit old. But Dave Tolbaugh, I think, is in his 50s too. But you know, mostly these are young guys. Ryan Pace is a young guy. I think that's the direction he's going to go. And those are some of the better offensive minds in this league. And that's really what you need to focus on, is building talent around a young quarterback. And that's something you can really quickly do. Is, you know, the best thing is Cam Meredith is going to come back next year and be able to play, because he got hurt so early.
Right.
He's going to be back. He's going to be back, you know, for training camp. And then you have all this money to sign people. You're going to have a high draft pick. Is you can quickly turn this around.
Yeah, exactly.
Bringing talent in.
You draft a few, you sign a guy, you have some returning guys from injury. Like,
yeah,
you said, it's, you can do it.
Yeah, you can absolutely do this. And, you know, it's not going to be easy, but you need a coach that can mold these guys and really, you know, bring in a winning attitude. And the one nice thing about bringing in a young head coach, somebody that's under 40 or right around 40, is that they're more likely to want to keep a guy like a Vic Fangio, because they're like, listen, I respect the hell out of you and what you do, and it's really great. I want to keep you on here, and you know, you maintain a quality defensive staff, and then you actually bring in a offensive mind, and that's how you start winning football.
Yeah. And I think that there's going to be a lot of pressure on Ryan Pace the coming off season, whether it's looking at new coaching for the future, whether it's filling in the holes, further developing a Trubisky. I mean, there's going to be a lot of pressure on him. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, he's got to do the right thing. And I think if you fire John Fox now, I think it actually takes the pressure off of you. If you wait the whole season, things are going to get worse. The fire is going to get hotter, and you're going to have a lot more people with pitchforks and torches at your door than you would if you fired him and said, listen, we understand you're not happy because we're not happy. We're doing something. Is, you know, we've got the whole rest of the season plus the off season to try to figure out what we want, what we're going to do. But right now we've made the decision that we're going that direction, and we're giving Vic Fangio the chance to see what he can do.
I'm waiting for that to happen, even though I'm scared it won't. I want that to happen. That's exactly what I want to see. I want to see this team take action right now, show they care, and not just say it like I ranted about earlier. Show you care by doing something. And you know what? Let's say Fangio does a really good job, then that makes Ryan Pace look really good. And if he doesn't do that great of a job, at least you say they made an attempt to make an immediate change. And that is something that we have not seen the Bears do in this kind of situation. I couldn't even tell you when they did do that. So do it. You are not playing for the playoffs. You're not going to be close to the playoffs. You only lose more by staying where you're at. Any action, it does better for you. So just do it.
Absolutely. I don't really have anything else more I want to talk about the Bears. Do you want to talk about the Blackhawks, or do you just want to call it a night?
Oh, there's a few things I'd like to say. Before we get to the Blackhawks, I got a text request from one of my good friends. John loves the show, loves listening to us. Just bringing up the whole Nikola Mirotic stuff with the Bulls. And I don't know if you heard about it. He was in practice today, but he still didn't interact or look at Bobby Portis. I don't know if you heard about that.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. They were both of the Bulls on our working out. And right. I think the guys over at Ball tweeted out the best. Is Casey Johnson tweeted out a quote from John Paxson that said, "The reality is you can't make a trade just to make a trade." And the guys from Ball tweeted back, "Nah, that's the reality when your player breaks another teammate's face. One's got to go." And is that is absolutely correct. This is a toxic situation right now. Is Mirotic may have started it all. I don't know. I wasn't there. But Bobby Portis brought the heat, broke Nikolai Mirotic's face, and Mirotic basically said, "You got to choose him or me." And the team all said, "Well, we're going to choose Bobby Portis." You know?
That's got to make you feel crappy.
Yeah, I think part of it was that, you know, he forced everybody to choose, and they saw Bobby Portis saying, you know, "Hey, I screwed up. I did something wrong. I'm trying to be a man about it." And Mirotic is acting like, I probably wouldn't want to, you know, I'd probably be pretty mad too if somebody broke my face and I had to hang out with him and deal with him every day in and day out. That probably takes a lot to look past, but you know, he forced out everybody else to make a decision, and apparently they made a decision. So I don't know how you bring Mirotic back. I don't even know when he's scheduled to come back.
Yeah, because he just started doing like workouts, because the team said that they had to have him come back and try to reinstate himself with the team. And there was the report that he was having civil conversations with a couple team members. And obviously Portis was not one of them, because it emphasized how he never interacted with Portis. But that's the goal right now. And it seems like the Bulls are set on keeping both. And look, Mirotic can't play on the same team as a guy and completely avoid him. You just can't do that. That's not possible. Whether he's in practice or eventually comes back, you're going to have to face him eventually. And I get that he's upset about having his jaw broken and a concussion. I get that. And I also get that Bobby Portis wants to mend the relationship. And, you know, there's a little bit of conflict there of feelings and whatnot. But at the end of the day, this is just a really big, just, it's a mess, and it's a lot of dumb drama, and it's unnecessary drama, because, you know, the altercation happened in the first place. You don't want to see that happen with your team, but unfortunately it did happen, and this isn't going to go away with any ease.
No, this team, it's like I said, it starts from ownership all the way down to players punching players. This is a dumpster fire of a team, and it doesn't matter if they get the number one overall pick, because they're so bad that they're going to screw that up.
Yeah. Well, that makes it even more frustrating. But hey, All-Star Game 2020 at the United Center. Get hyped.
That's true. I'll probably try to get tickets, but, you know, it's the Bulls won't have anybody in it.
Yeah, that's what everyone else is saying. It's maybe at their venue, but you won't see really many Bulls faces in that. But yeah, I mean, you're trying to rebuild. You're in year one of a rebuild, and the fact that you're having to deal with this, it's just bad. And when to see your vice president say you're not going to trade someone just to trade someone, it's like, well, I get that you want them to work out, and I get that you both want to have them on your team, but when you think about it, is it really worth it? Niko Mirotic has struggled. Other teams didn't want to sign him. So why do you want to keep him around so badly? That's what I'd like to know.
I think if he really thinks that they are going to mend this fence, then they're dumb. The only saving grace could be if they're trying to publicly say this to, so they have some bit of leverage to trade him.
Right.
That's the only thing. But they signed Mirotić basically so they had, they met the NBA salary floor. So they had to have a pay a certain amount, you know, total in salary, and they didn't have enough. So they just paid it all to Mirotić. So he's not a guy that fits this team, what they're doing going forward. So who cares? Just trade him. It's just, you know, it's NBA. You have to have similar salaries. So you take on somebody else's garbage, overpaid player, and maybe you at least get somebody that fits in there.
And if not, you just don't have that distraction anymore. So trade him for a bag of balls for all I care. If you can't get a good trade, just get him out so you don't have this conflict anymore. He's happy. Portis is happy. Everyone's happy.
Yeah. You know, let it be. Move on. Is you didn't want Mirotić anyway. Is you could find somebody that's probably just way overpaid, that's had a bad contract, but can at least give you some solid minutes that you can trade Mirotić for. So who knows? We'll see.
Yeah. That's really all I had to say about that on the Bulls. But yeah, shout out to my friend John, who's a regular listener and enjoys our content and asking us some questions to answer.
Yeah, that's about as all you can say about a team that's won two games so far this season.
They do have two wins. For some reason, I thought they only had one.
They have two, and no other team has less than two. Wow. So. A few other teams have more than nine losses, but they have the least number of wins. So they'll go Bulls.
Hey, you know, I'll give them credit for this. They've had some really nice tank wins where you see guys like Markkanen play good games and help them, you know, kind of move things around, but still losing. I mean, that's quality tanking right there.
True. I just don't want to see Markkanen get hurt. He's already got some ankle injuries and some shoulder injuries. Guys played 13 games.
Yeah, I mean, he's fun to watch. And, you know, right now he's your best asset that's healthy right now. So you got to take that as something. And I like his attitude. I like the way he plays. So, you know, other than him right now, there's just nothing really interesting to watch. And, you know, I'll be honest, I haven't even watched a full game yet this season. I've watched maybe 2-3 quarters worth of the first 13 games. That's about
it. I try to watch at least a quarter of each game, and it's hard sometimes. It's hard sometimes.
It's not even we thought this would be fun bad. It's not really even fun bad.
No, it's really not. It's frustrating because they're not. I think it could be fun bad. I think they're still playing the wrong players. They got to figure out who the players are that, you know, you got to give your minutes to. And I just don't think they've found that right mix yet.
No, they haven't. And, you know, it's a long season, and you're going to get some guys returning from injury, Zach LaVine being the big one. But yeah, no, you're definitely right about that. So, and we'll see what happens to like the only veteran on the team, AKA Robin Lopez. You see if they flip him or not. You know, obviously he's probably the best overall player on the team, considering Lauri Markkanen, as good as he is, he's, you know, a rookie and he's still learning a lot. But, you know, it's like there's no one on that squad above 30, and the ones who are above 25 are guys you forget about, like, what is it? Quincy Pondexter from the Clippers.
Oh yeah,
like I didn't even know who that guy was when he came over. I'm like, who the heck is that?
Yeah, I was watching one game. I'm like, I don't remember this guy. I don't remember him.
Yeah, I mean, especially when both Portis and Nico were gone, and you're like, okay, there's Lauri Markkanen. Okay, there's Robin Lopez. Okay, there's Jerian Grant. Okay, there's Justin Holiday. Who are the rest of these guys?
It's just it's a band of misfit toys.
Who's there's a one guy. Paul Zipser. There's the other guy I kind of kind of know.
He really just, I mean, last year you had some hope for him. This year he's just been.
Yeah, last year he wasn't that bad.
Yeah, this year he's just been non-existent.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not going to watch much Bulls this year. There's just no reason for me to.
Yeah, absolutely. I just, it's frustrating. And I think it's just going to get worse.
Which we expect. Which is expected. The Hawks, on the other hand, that's a bit more frustrating.
Yes. So the Hawks, since last time we talked, have had three games. They had the absolute stinker against the Flyers. The overtime win, which they still struggled in, against Carolina.
Well, that's because Carolina's no good.
And then they blew the lead against the Devils.
That game really, really pissed me off.
That second period was some of the worst. That is the worst I've seen the Blackhawks play in years.
You know, they were one goal away. The Devils were one goal away from matching their high scoring from 2005.
Yeah, it was a bad, bad period. I mean, the Hawks started out. That was, you know, the Hawks' MO lately has been starting slow, then heating up later in the first period, having a stinker of a second period, and then either trying to play catch up or trying to play hold on for the third. And this one, they actually started off pretty quick. It was, you know, they were up 4-2 in the first period, and you had to feel pretty good.
They were 4-1 at one point.
Yeah, you had to feel pretty good in the first period. But you finally had Corey Crawford.
When they scored the fourth goal, I'm like, all right, cool. Blowout win. Let's go.
Yeah. Corey Crawford, and we've been saying this, is you can't rely on Corey Crawford playing, you know, like the best goalie ever for the whole season. And Corey Crawford really came back down to earth in this game.
Yeah. I mean, going into that game, he led the league in save percentage. And he led the league in goals against average. I mean, he's been phenomenal this year. And he's due for a bad game. And you know what? When he's having a bad game, when the defense looks really bad, that's not a good formula. And that showed last night.
Yeah. You know, the defense has really struggled in this stretch. Really struggled. Corey Crawford, even when he's playing well, is getting a lot of A-plus chances that he has to fight off.
Yep.
And for the most part, is the offense has been pretty stagnant.
And then the one game they score five goals, they give up seven. So go figure.
Yeah. The game against Carolina, you had Alex DeBrincat looked. It was kind of his like breakout game. He looked really good after a slow start here.
Looked awesome.
And you also really lucked out in that game because Carolina was on the power play quite a bit and they just couldn't capitalize on anything. They looked so anemic on the power play.
Yeah, I mean, again, that was a game the Hawks kind of won because Carolina's kind of bad.
True. And then that game against Philadelphia, that was probably, I mean, that one infuriated me for multiple reasons. One, my wife's a Flyers fan. But two, it was a really slow start. You had defensive breakdowns. You had a bad break with the puck going off the official skate. You know, it was supposed to be the big breakout of the Sharp, Taves, and Kane line, and that was so bad that they nixed that after what one period. You couldn't stop the Flyers' top line at all. The only positive about that is Connor Murphy finally scored a goal.
Whoop-de-doo. Which, that kind of gets me to a point I wanted to ask you really quick before I forget. You talked about Connor Murphy and Jan Ruda. I mean, it's funny. They seem more productive when it comes to scoring, but when it comes, lately at least, seems like they're better at scoring than they are at defense.
Yeah. I mean, really, that's true. I just, I just don't know what else to say about this team. They lack a sense of urgency. I know it's still early in the season, but you know, they lack a sense of urgency.
Look, I mean, it's early, but once November is over and we're getting to December, next thing you know, it's going to be the halfway point.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you can't, there's gotta be a point where you say, you know, we've got to play better and actually go out there and execute. You know, every time you say, well, they've got a couple of days off, maybe they're going to figure some things out or come back with a fire in their belly, and then they come out flat from that. And that's the frustrating part, is the Flyers game was after a couple of days off and they just came out flat.
Yeah, exactly. They had what, 3 days off going to that game?
And they just came out.
And I mean, that was a horribly played hockey game.
Yeah, it was really bad. And you know, right now the Blackhawks, 1, 2, 3, 4. Like they're tied with 1, 2, 3, 4 or three other teams for that last playoff spot, I think. Let me see playoffs. Wait, wild card. So right now it will be wild cards would be Calgary and Dallas, and Vancouver and the Blackhawks are be outside looking in.
You know, we talked about earlier how there's no absolute force in the West, but I think there are enough good teams where the Hawks really have to start picking things up here and not just kind of rely on everyone around them being mediocre. I mean, there are some competitive teams in the West, and they got to pick things up eventually. And when you see a lot of the similar problems night in, night out, for the past few years, when things have gone bad, we've all gone to the, oh, they'll figure things out. They always do, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, that was true for a long time. But right now, I don't know if things will get much better. Maybe they will, but I can't guarantee it right now because we're seeing a lot of the same problems over and over again. And I hate to say it, but our veteran defensemen, they're great players, but they're getting old. They've got tons of miles on them, and it just looks like they can't keep up anymore, which, you know, that happens when you play so much extra hockey. That's what happens. And like we've said before, teams are beating us with speed. And I don't think people fear the Blackhawks like they once did. Again, maybe things do turn around. I'm not writing the season off, but I will say this. I would not be surprised if things kind of don't get much better with the way things are looking right now. But I'm not saying it
won't. Yeah, I mean, Seabrook has looked bad for most of the season. Duncan Keith has, you know, he's looked okay, but far from what he was a couple of seasons ago. And
right, he's not the Norris Trophy winner that we've
seen. You've seen him get beat by people that he would never have gotten beat like that a couple of years ago. The speed just isn't there like it was. It's not like he forgot how to play. It's just, you know, the wheels have slowed down a little bit. And
again, that's what happens with age when you play all that hockey.
Absolutely. I you have to believe that if the Blackhawks don't figure this out and at least make a really deep run for the Stanley Cup, that there's a good possibility Quenneville is no longer the Blackhawks coach after this season.
I mean, you got to weigh that possibility.
I mean, that has to be a really realistic possibility. But considering some of the volatility between the general manager and the head coach, that the head coach, if he's not performing, is going to be, you know, ousted. And this, the way they're playing, if, you know, if they eke into the playoffs or they're outside looking in from the end of the season, that is not acceptable, you know, for this team. they have expectations that are way too high.
Right. With all the success they've had and all the good things that they've had. And, you know, the frustration with the Blackhawks is absolutely nothing like the Bears, because the Blackhawks, you say, we saw them be one of the best and most successful franchises of this decade. The Bears, the exact opposite. And the Blackhawks, you say, well, things aren't looking good, and maybe things will get better. Maybe they won't. You know, it'll be a little harder to accept if things don't get better, because we've been so good for a decade now. But at least you know that you had a lot of success recently, and you understand why things would start to falter a little bit. You understand that players don't last forever. You understand that coaches always have an expiration date, no matter where you are, who you are, and what sport you play. It's tougher to accept, but you can understand it. You don't want to say goodbye to the good times, but it's not like you're saying, well, they're bad because they're bad. No, they're bad. You know, they're not doing as well because, you know, after years of wear and tear and teams figuring you out, you know why it happens, even though it's harder to accept, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I mean, Bill Walsh, that won a bunch of Super Bowls as a 49ers head coach, he wrote a book, and he, I'm trying to remember the exact way he said the quote, but, it was something along the lines that, you know, after 5 years or whatever, coaches' abilities with a team, you know, their success starts to wane. You have a certain shelf life, and if you, you know, even if you are a successful coach and there's nothing wrong with your coaching ability, at some point your ability to lead these guys gets stagnant and it's time to make a change. Maybe it's 10 years. Excuse me.
Yeah. And again, this isn't like, I don't think you're saying, and I know I'm not saying, you know, fire Quenneville right now like we want John Fox. No, that's not the case. What my point is that this season is extremely telling of the future. If things stay where they are and this team just looks mediocre, then yeah, I think it absolutely is time for a change. For all we know, they could turn it on in the second half and they win another Stanley Cup, and, you know, our criticism early on ends up looking stupid and for naught. But, I think some Hawks fans have to realize that things may not get better, and that you have to be prepared for all scenarios. You can be confident all you want, and that's fine. Have all the confidence in the world. There's nothing wrong with having confidence, but some people do have to realize, I think, that, you know, there is a possibility that it won't. And if that time comes, you know, we got to be ready for some changes. That's just how it's going to be. But, you know, by all means, if you're fully confident in this team, then be fully confident in this team. They've done a lot of good things, and I understand it. But if things don't get better, then expect some changes. And I just think right now it's realistic for Hawks fans to look at both scenarios, not just one or the other.
Yeah. And you know, this is the NHL. I don't think Quenneville is a bad coach or done by any stretch. I think it just has a shelf life. And you see so much in the NHL, especially, you know, recycling of coaches, and he's going to end up, you know, if the Blackhawks do let him go, he's going to go somewhere else and do well with that program. And the Blackhawks are going to bring in somebody else that's going to reinvigorate the roster that they have and, you know, see some results. It's just the way the world works in hockey.
And you know what? It's going to happen eventually. Maybe it's next year, maybe it's in a few years, but eventually it is going to happen. And nothing can take away what Joe Quenneville has done. When we look back at Joe Quenneville's career, we're going to think of those cups. We're going to think of that success first and foremost. But, you know, like you said, shelf life.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolute shelf life.
Now, here's my last question of the night for you. How long do we have until we say things are not going to get better. If how long do things have to stay status quo for us to say that if things don't get better?
Oh, I think
this season.
Wait, how long in this season before we can just...
Right, like how long in this season do we have?
I think it just depends on how... if they are meandering around the wild card spot, you know, it could go all the way up to the end. I mean, till the last weekend of the season. But...
Like 2011.
Yeah. But if... And I think that's probably how it's going to be. I mean, unless... Yeah, I just don't see them turning it on. I think they're just gonna be in that middle of the pack teams that right on the cusp of the playoffs, and a couple of them will go in, a couple won't. I don't see them making this run to win the division or be a surefire playoff team.
It would take for them to get really hot in teams like the Blues, the Predators, and other teams to not play that well.
Yeah, and I don't see that many teams not playing well. And it was funny, I was joking with somebody else's, you know, it would be funny if Quenneville was gone at the end of the season and then they bring in Daryl Sutter.
You know, I actually had that same thought the other day. I was thinking about that.
I mean, it's another guy that he's still got a lot of coaching years left in him. He's in his 50s.
He knows what it's like to win a Stanley Cup. He won two with the Kings.
He had that team.
A team that wasn't even that flashy. Yeah,
he had that team humming. So, you know, he said he wants to coach again. He's waiting for the right fit. I think having a team with Kane and Taves and Crawford is probably a pretty darn good fit for most people.
I definitely agree with that. Absolutely. I think also in this Blackhawks season, one thing that has really, really caught my eye is the fact that I don't see them. Oh, how do I say this? This is just kind of me rambling, and this is me just kind of talking how I see the team. I just don't see the same energy from both their surroundings and the team. For all those years, they did all those silly little things, the little videos, pranks, and you saw a lot of energy from them. I just don't see it anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just flat.
Yeah, that's how I describe it, flat. And, you know, I hate seeing it, but that's just kind of how I describe it right now. And, you know, I hate sounding like negative, negative, negative when it comes to it, but, you know, with the way they've played this year outside the first two games, you know, I can't say I'm overly, overly confident that they're going to turn into the best team in the NHL, even though I also say I'm not throwing away the season just yet because it's too early to do that. But I'm just not counting on that big run, like you said, and I think that for something like that to happen, something drastic would have to happen. And I just don't know if it is.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think this is going to be another dud season. The beginning of the season, it looked great. Patrick Sharp has just not looked good. You've seen a lot of older guys not playing where you need them to play. There's no reinforcements coming. This is just, you have what you have, and, you know, it's up to Quenneville to make it work.
I really don't want to anger the Patrick Sharp crowd. And look, Patrick Sharp was my favorite player, from 2009 to like 2014 when he was in his prime. He was my favorite Blackhawk, and I will always think of Patrick Sharp as one of my favorite Blackhawks. But if this lack of production continues, I almost think you got to say thanks, but we're going to go more with some of our younger guys. Like, I really think, personally, I want to see Vinny Hinostroza up again because I really like what this kid has. And, you know, right now, Sharp just, I know he's got a good attitude about it, and he says he wants to keep working and he's in good shape, and I credit him, but you know what? If there just continues to be a lack of production from wherever he plays, whatever line he plays, I think you might have to make a choice and just say, let's go with some younger guys and start to, you know, maybe healthy scratch him every now and then and play somebody else, or, you know, make a decision with him. And again, I'm not trying to anger the Patrick Sharp crowd here, but that's how I feel. And, you know, you look at a lot of the guys who've come back second time around with the Hawks, when Stan Bowman's reunited someone, it hasn't always gone particularly well. And that's just because a lot of those guys are older and they're at the tail ends of their careers.
It's true. Nothing really to add to that. That's true. It's not like this season, it's not like Duncan Keith's going to get faster or Brent Seabrook's going to get younger or, you know,
Sharp's going to get younger.
Sharp's going to get younger. It's you got what you got. And, you're going to have to start relying on younger guys to come up and make big plays. Brandon Saad's
like I said, I want Hinostroza back up.
Yeah. Somebody's got to step up, and maybe it's going to be Alex DeBrincat that starts playing well. But I mean, he's
looked better recently.
You know, these last three games actually looked much better.
Yeah, and you know, I'm going to be patient with DeBrincat because, you know, he's young. He's what, 19, 20 years old? Straight from the juniors. You know, he's going to take some time to get in there. And I think the way he's playing lately is really showing the potential he has. So I'm a bit patient with him. I'll admit that. So, you know, you want to see more from him. One player that I think has been kind of disappointing this year, and other people have said it, guess who I'm thinking about? Compared to how he's played the past few years and this year.
I don't know who you're thinking of.
Richard Panik. He's kind of disappeared.
Yeah, he sort of has. I mean, before he was on the scoring line and he's been on the bottom lines. But it's been quiet.
But at least you'd see him make plays no matter what line he was on. And now just he's taken some boneheaded penalties and, you know, he's been a little quieter. And, you know, that kind of stinks because I really like Richard Panik. And so far as a Hawk up to this point, he's been great.
Yeah, he really has. He's going to be on the top line with Taves and Saad this next game. And then Anisimov. So what the current lines are going to be is Taves, Saad, and Panik, Anisimov, Schmaltz, and Kane, Lance Boma, who's actually been playing pretty well, Tanner Caro, and
I kind of like it,
DeBrincat. And then the bottom line is going to be Sharp, Wingles, and Hayden. And I'm just honestly, I think Sharp should just be a healthy scratch.
It like Christopher Stieg. He's like Christopher Stieg when he came back.
That's a good comparison. He's like
you saw plenty of healthy scratches.
Yeah. I just don't know what else to say. The defensive pairings, nothing seems to be working right. There's no clicking. You got guys playing out of position and defensive side. You're trying to shoehorn players in, and I just think it's just this is a bad recipe that they've got. I don't think they have bad talent. I think it's just they don't have the right players for what Quenneville is trying to do with this team.
Yeah, and I mean, we all knew that one day these players were going to get old and slow down because that's what father time does. And, you know, we're seeing that with some of these guys. So, you know, some of it was inevitable. My main fear, though I don't think it's going to ever be to this degree, I just don't want to turn into a Red Wings type in the 2010s where they kind of still live on nostalgic glory and squeak into the playoffs as like the last seed every year and get bounced in the first round with a slightly above average to average record. Like, I don't want to be treading water like that. I don't want this team to become that. You know what I mean?
And I still think they have a lot of talent. They've got a lot of young talent. I think they need to be less rigid with the system that they run and utilize the talent they have. And, you know, part of it is guys are just sloppy playing, and I don't know how you fix that. Is sloppy passing, mental mistakes.
Some things you just can't coach. That's on the players.
Yeah. But I think we should just wrap this episode up. I think we've spit enough venom out. Mm-hmm. But I want to thank everyone for listening. You know, please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. Share with your friends. And if you have questions, comments, concerns, hit us up on social media at ShyFanPat1. At Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com. And thank you so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bearing.